Hi, I'm Jane.
And I'm Sophie.
Welcome to A TARDIS of One's Own.
A queer feminist journey through time and space and new who.
Hi everyone. If you hear a bell in the background, that is one of my housemate's mini cats, because we're recording at my place today.
Hello.
Sophie's also here.
I'm patting the cat.
No. We're doing this so Sophie can have some serotonin.
I'm 70% here for the cats.
Yeah, always. No, because in a really funny story, guys, we were supposed to record at work as always, and then Sophie asked me what my theme was for the episode, and I stared at her with a blank face, probably like a loading screen for a good 2 minutes, and then just went, "Is it Thursday?"
It was long enough that I was like, "Am I wrong? Is it not pod day?" Because you were so just like, huh?
So we're doing a quick record now, and then we're going to go see Timmy Chalamet stare at sand.
Timmy Champagne.
Yeah. Anyway, how is your life, week, month?
I mean, that's all quite different answers.
Okay, how is your week?
No, fine. No, we're turning this bus around.
We are turning the bus around.
This is our new life project, which is an everything routine, personal writing projects, exercise,
finances.
Nutrition, finances. We're turning the bus around.
We're turning the bus around. It is very much like the Austin Powers meme of him trying to turn the cart around in a tiny corridor. I keep sending Sophie that gif.
Because that's what I think we're doing really well. But yeah, it's baby steps and it might be a 17-point turn, but the bus will be turned around.
I expected you to yell at me when I was sending you all those photos of clothes this morning.
So I didn't yell at you because I knew you were going into a hair appointment, but I did tell my partner and then was like, Jen just sent me some really cool jumpers, so I think we should check that out. However, I hope she just looked with her eyes, not her wallet. And he was like, oh no.
Sophie is my personal financial, I'm not going to say advisor, it's more like custodian.
Yeah.
Keeper of the keys to my finances, because it turns out she is a wasteful girl. And I'm a bit alarmed. Because Sophie made me add up how much I was spending on little treats, and I did not like the little result. So here we are.
Yeah, here we are. What's done is done. And yeah, I'm cool. Batting things out of your hand. I'm shaming. I'm supporting.
It's a great
whatever
service.
It takes.
You should rent it out. If anyone wants a guardian, hit us up. We can discuss Sophie's fee.
It's typically a two-step process. One is put in an Excel spreadsheet. Two is I will praise and or berate.
Depending which you prefer.
Yeah, sometimes both. Just the really, the one too. Yeah, so that actually has been cooler. It's cool to have a buddy.
Yeah.
To be like, I'm not feeling good. Some of it is within my control.
Yeah.
I'm going to ignore the things that aren't.
Yeah.
And focus on the control. And I do feel better for it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been great having you and I really appreciate you. It is nice when you're not on your own. Trying to fix your problems.
Hell yeah.
And I do feel like everyone's kind of going through it. March is just a bad month, in my opinion.
Why. But yes, yeah, so mixed bag, but very excited for the cinema.
Me too, it's been ages.
Yeah.
All right, well, we should just crack on.
We should crack on. So, this week we watched the 2008 Christmas special, The Next Doctor. It's Christmas Eve, 1851, and Cybermen stalk Victorian London. The Doctor discovers a spate of mysterious deaths, and he's surprised to meet another Doctor. Things aren't adding up for 10, but the two doctors need to work together to stop the rise of the Cyber King.
Yeah, I love how these, both the Daleks and the Cybermen, suddenly just become obsessed with, like, kings and emperors. I'm like, why?
I'm like, who is writing this? It's become very
feudal.
Monarchy.
Yeah, monarchist.
Yeah. So I just need to quickly sidebar to the title of this episode, which is the TV equivalent of clickbait.
Yeah, handy.
Everyone's like, oh, I'm the next doctor. Oh, regeneration. Oh, is he a doctor? Is he a doctor from this doctor's timeline? And he hasn't become him yet? And he's had a memory thing? And then, no, he's been adult.
Yeah, it's like, a bait and switch. And like, from memory, we didn't know who the next doctor was going to be. So they had kept Matt Smith's casting contained. So there was this moment where people were like, oh.
Is it Neil Morrissey?
David Morrissey?
David Morrissey? Oh my god.
Who's Neil?
Neil
Morrissey?
Is he a guitar man?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Anyway,
Dave.
The guitar man.
Mr. Morrissey.
Anyway, in terms of the Bechdel, this does not pass.
Fuck no. I have written no in caps.
None Bechdel passing.
Jesus fucking Christ. There's two women in the entire thing.
I know, and one of them barely has anything to do.
Yeah.
So this is great because we can go straight into my discussion question, which is I want to talk about underestimation. Yeah.
Yep.
Because I feel like the doctor is slightly underestimated when he comes in here because this other doctor thinks that they're the doctor and they're like, who's this random man? He doesn't need to partake. And then the doctor is like, oh, maybe this is my future self. But then when he realizes that Jackson isn't actually a Time Lord, he then underestimates Jackson as well. And then Jackson comes in at the end and has this little hero moment. But specifically, I want to talk how underestimation actually leads to the whole premise of this episode. It's because Miss Hardigan has been underestimated her whole life. She's not been afforded any real opportunities in Victorian times. Mm-hmm. She isn't appreciated for her intellect. She is looked down on. These men dismiss her, mock her. All these things. Yep. And it's because of that underestimation that she chucks in her lot with the Cybermen, right? Because she's like, finally, I can be seen for who I am.
Yeah.
But in a way, she also then, of course, underestimates the Cybermen by trusting them. Yeah. But they also underestimate her and how strong her will actually is, right? So that's interesting. And then I want to talk about Rosalita.
Yeah, fuck
because
hell.
I think the entire episode is ruined by the line at the end where old mate is like, well, my son is going to need a nursemaid. What? This is someone who you've been treating as a companion the entire time and like you really value her and the only opportunity you can see for her is as a nursemaid for your child that you forgot you had.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. So kids back on the scene and she goes from business partner to
nanny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
I was reading an article which looked at a case study of women being underestimated in the workplace, and they specifically looked at jockeys because female jockeys compete next to male jockeys one for one. And so used that. They looked at data from the UK and Ireland for like a year, I think, and they assessed whether women are underestimated based on how likely they are considered to be winning because of the betting. So there's like a good data set to make judge. Yeah. And it came out that they were underestimated in 0.3% of the time that... Mm. They actually win more than people think they do. But in this paper, they talk about underestimation as a form of discrimination. So it says, we investigate whether society, for want of a better word and intended to include both men and women, systemically underestimate the skills and abilities of women. Perhaps many employers mistakenly believe that women are not capable of carrying out high-powered jobs. Furthermore, perhaps the absence of women in these roles accentuates this perception, as employers do not get the opportunity to learn about the abilities of women. This type of discrimination is labeled as mistake-based. So it's based on this like mistaken assumption. And it makes me think of like there's currently a viral video going around because it's World Down Syndrome Day. And this actress did a video that talks about, because you underestimate me, I don't have the opportunities, which means like, because you think I can't drink, you don't serve me the drink, so I don't get to drink.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't think that, it's a really cool ad and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, because there's this whole thing about also like, you think I can't live on my own, so I don't live on my own.
Yeah.
But if you think I can live on my own, like if you don't raise me with boundaries and constraints, and I think this applies to women as well, right? Like if you know, men will often say, well, that women just can't do these jobs, but you've never given an opportunity to them
that's
to do
it.
That
That's
job.
Exactly it. And if you don't give an opportunity, then no one has. It's this catch 22, right? If you don't get the opportunities because it's presumed you can't do it, then you will never learn how to do it or never show that you can anyway.
Yeah. And I think we see that in a lot of sports still too today. Like we were talking about Formula One the other day.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Literally no reason there's a woman not in those cars.
No, it's just they won't give them a chance because they've decided that they can't do it, right? Yeah. Because it's like jockeys. There's no reason why a female jockey can't compete next to a male jockey, right? Like, I don't know, it's weird. Yeah, and there's loads of opportunities. And, there's a discussion I had with my own dad. When I was younger, was really interested in pursuing the career that he has. And he's just like, women don't do that job. It's like, it's just not for women.
Okay.
And part of that was also like, we've discussed it since, where I'm like, I think you really did me a disservice. And he was like, well, it's just because the few women that we then have come through get treated so badly as well.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but don't you think perhaps you should sit with that and interrogate why that is? Because they're like, well, it's a dirty job and it's a hard job. And you're like, well, it's a woman's choice whether they think they can do a job or not. But yeah, this underestimation also has an effect on women and their own perception of being able to do the job, right? There's this whole study about women only applying for jobs when they have 100% of the skills and match the criteria 100%, whereas that never occurs to men to do that. Because women have a greater chance, I guess, of feeling imposter syndrome because they're underestimated. And then you start believing these stories about yourself, right?
Yeah, hell yeah. And we've talked about that before, like your example with like CEOs in elite sport.
Yeah.
Like, they'll see one failure as representing a reason why that view is justified.
And we see that for minorities all the time, right? Like, when you are a black person promoted into a position of power, suddenly you become representative of all black people. And if you fail, then it's like, oh, well.
Yeah.
And it's like, we don't ascribe those same constraints to old white men. We just don't.
Not at all.
And you ascribe like wisdom and all these things to these people when they have not really earned it, but it's just perception.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's self-fulfilling.
Yeah, super interesting.
Yeah, it makes me sad.
It does make me sad. Especially because, slightly off this specific topic, but there's these threads that keep coming up.
Mm. Yeah, it's very similar,
like,
right?
Now we've done almost 2 years of pod.
Yeah.
There's these threads because life, you know, art imitates life, right? Again, this one was written by Russell T.
Yeah.
Like, there's no fucking women of agency. There's no, like, even, like, he could be like, but the main woman, the main baddie is a woman. Yeah, but only in respect to the fact that she's been shat on by men. And then she ultimately ends up...
And it's weird because it's almost framed as like a girl power villain moment. Like, yeah, she's coming into her power, but it's not though. And then for her, for the doctor to then ultimately defeat her by unlocking her empathy so she can see what she's done. If I was her, if you believe her character up until this point, she would have been like, yeah, so get fucked. They deserve to die. It's like Daenerys Targaryen in the final, like when she just fries everyone because she's been through so much trauma that she's just like, nah. I don't care about these people. They would fry me in a heartbeat.
Yeah, 100%.
That's more believable than her suddenly being like, ah, and through the power of my empathy, I will take down the Cybermen. Like, get fucked.
Like, 100%.
And again, it distills women down to their emotions. It's like, yeah, this woman who is like powerful and smart, but at the end of the day, she's still just an emotional being and she's still just a caring person. Like, nah, I'm not having it.
And that just because she was a woman, or maybe because she was a human, but it kind of reads like she was a woman, that this empathy is locked away.
Yeah.
But it's there, it's just being suppressed because she's had a tough time.
Yeah, and the, like, Cybermen are like suppressing it, like actively exploiting it, right?
No, and that's not the case, rather than just like, maybe she is just a shit person and shit people make shit choices.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I don't know. There's like a real tendency, I feel like, trying to redeem the human villains in Doctor Who. It's always like they have to have a come to Jesus moment at the end where they're like, oh, actually, I was just misguided all along. And it's an interesting thing to just be like, actually, sometimes people are just bad.
Yeah. Like, I was weak, or I, you know, that, and it's like, no, maybe you...
Off the top of my head, I feel like the only time this has really happened where they let it go was that one, the Dalek episode, where the American museum tech bro internet guy, at the end of the day, just had no remorse. And it was a woman who, like, wiped his memory and dumped him on the side of the road and had her own moment of glory. That's, like, the only one where they didn't try and rehab the human villain.
Yeah, no.
Let's keep a watch on that.
Yeah, that is super interesting, dude. I have a decent amount of random obs, okay. So maybe we just crack in.
Go for it.
So, of course, it's the Christmas special. Therefore, it is very twee Victorian England
Dickensian
Christmas time.
Why I'm always?
Like, dude, why always?
The snow is cute. And he was happy to see the snow, and that was cute. I like that he was happy to see snow. But it also very rarely snows in London at Christmas time. So it's interesting to me that they put so much snow in these episodes.
Yeah, it is. It was funny when the Morrissey turned up as the other doctor, because I was like, another doctor? A future doctor? Or mental illness? Could have been any. And it turned out to be like, obviously, he'd been.
Kind of mental illness.
Yeah, Cyberman, but... And then I was like, oh, Cyberman again.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just...
I'm wondering if this is the... Is this the start of the doctor meeting the doctor? Because this happens a lot in later seasons, where the doctor runs into different versions of himself, or... thinks he's running into different versions of himself. And I wonder if this was the start of the trend. I don't know if this happened in the past. I feel like it didn't, because they made such a big deal when they had like all the doctors together, because there's Tennant and Matt Smith get together for some special at some point, and that was, they made a big deal about that.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I feel like this might have been the start of it, but it just feels a bit like as you said, it's clickbait. It's a bait and switch, and I'm like, I don't like it.
No, I don't like
being treated like an idiot.
No, exactly. And to be rewarded with, let's be honest, a kind of mid-episode.
Yeah, it's not great.
Nah, it feels, like my partner said, it feels like a filler.
Yeah.
That they were like, fuck, we need to do a Christmas special.
I remember at the time, because of course we all knew that was David Tennant's last run. And so every time you watched it, you were like, is this the time he's going to regenerate? Is this the time he's going to regenerate? And I remember being very excited for the Christmas special and watching it and being like, And there's four specials. And I don't know why they did the four specials, but they did.
That's too many specials.
I think they were just dragging out the David Tennant thing because they were riding high. Off the popularity of Who, right?
Yeah. So we're well into the didn't watch at the time stage now. And I did not know that they did this draggy out into it.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I remember because I had to get the IT guy at my mum's work was illegally downloading them and awesome. Giving them to her so I could watch. My friend would come around and we'd watch it together because obviously we didn't have access to the BBC.
Yeah, yeah.
You know the creatures at the front, the little, what I'm going to call dog Cybermen?
I wrote shaggy dog cyber things.
Yeah. They reminded me of Attack the Block. Remember when we went to watch Attack the Block?
And those Block.
Alien creatures?
Yeah.
Very similar vibe.
Yeah. They're weird. And it's this weird, in some ways I wrote like, the CGI is getting better, but then you have clearly a man in a shaggy dog suit wearing a mask.
And the mask was like borderline. It was like arts and crafts hour at the kindergarten mask. Like, but maybe that is the joy of Doctor Who, that any of us could make these costumes at home.
Like, we really could.
With some cardboard.
Yeah, and like a glue gun. And, you know.
Some silver spray paint.
25 minutes. Yeah. So, Ten hates killing, but loves a Cyberman head explosion.
Yeah. He also loves a good murder, because, you know, when Jackson is like, it started with a murder, and he goes, oh, good. And he's like, bad, but good.
Yeah.
Rosalita.
Yeah.
When he's like, Rosita? Rosita, sorry, yeah. Rosita. And he's like, oh, good name. I'm like, no, we've moved on. You've drawn a line under the rose thing. Fucking move on. Move on.
I know, he said that and I was like, fuck me. If this becomes another rose, like, wistful. But it didn't come up again and I was like, thank God. But yeah, it was just, I don't know, because they had this second Doctor. So then a little bit of Rosita, like it was meant to be filling this gap of 10 being Son's companion, but it didn't fit right. Like, yeah. it just became the 10 show.
Yeah.
Of like, meh.
I don't know. It did have some fun moments, like, okay, the Fob Watch fake out. I mean, they started so serious with that and it's just like, great comedic moment.
Fell onto the ground.
But he's got some kind of like physical comedy moments, like the messing around with the canes and the umbrellas. And then he's like, I'm a dab hand with a cutlass. And he's just being an idiot.
Yeah.
I actually really love that the Cyberman was just in the closet when he opened the door. He was like, ah! Kind of funny.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Yeah. The balloon TARDIS.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Infrastamps. An exposed cyber brain that looked very fake.
An attack of the dodgy Bluetooth headsets again.
Yeah, the old men, it's just Bluetooth headsets you've spray painted. Or like maybe even hearing aids?
Yeah.
They were looking very hearing aidy. Red dress at that funeral looked great. Oh. Not dressed for the weather.
Baller dress. I wrote that down. Baller red dress. Like, I would wear that. That is a great
And they were like, shooketh.
It's hard to feel that she's evil because I feel very sympathetic to women who go mad with rage. I just think, I feel like we're all on that trajectory.
Yeah.
I think that it makes sense to go mad with rage.
Yeah.
Maybe this is why women were all on Valium in like the 50s.
And getting diagnosed with, Victorian age hysteria. So I wrote Miss Mercy Hartigan, baddie.
Yeah.
But in like the baddie and baddie sense.
Yeah.
Also, I think played by Deborah Kerwin, who is an Irish actress. So she's covering that relatively well.
Yeah, good work.
Yeah. Lots of sci-fi talk to explain things, like the info stamps. Then we had lots of the void, and they've fallen through dimensions.
And they stole it from the Daleks when
there's a dimension vault.
In the void. And I'm like, okay.
Okay, yeah, cool. You can, like, if you just make up some shit, it explains a lot. They can be like, no, but this is the dimension of the fluff of the thing. And you're like, okay. You know, like, he doesn't really...
I love when he said, do you have your legs on silent to the Cyberman?
That made me laugh.
It felt improv'd.
It did feel improv'd. So this bizarre children factory situation with a very large mace suspended from the ceiling for presumably no purpose. It's just swinging around. Then the cybered old dudes with the hearing aids are rounding up the children for a workforce. But like, I shit you not, this looks like it's in real time. They're in their factory for all of 10 minutes. And then they're like, everything's ready, we can go. And then they fire up the robot. Like, they could have just got the Cybermen to do that labor. Like, I don't know why the children was... It felt...
Because it's Victorian London, the children labor must be exploited.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, this felt really odd.
And then they do the close-up of Mercy with her black eyes. That's how you know she's evil, because she's got all black eyes. Like, it's the supernatural demon reveal.
Yeah. When they were doing things and it became clear that the factory was like a machinery for something, I was like, spaceship? And then it came out of the Thames and it was a massive giant fucking Cyberman. But how deep is the Thames? Not that deep. Was he crumpled up? Is he fucking watertight?
I just wrote, oh my god, giant Cyberman.
Yeah.
And then I said, so many child workers, orphans, sold to the workhouse.
Frederick!
child reveal. That's what I wrote next. Yeah. Took him long enough, though,
took
to get to
fucking
the
long enough.
Child reveal.
I wrote Frederick in all caps, and then will deafs need therapy? And then child actor is either very good or being held hostage. Because the entire time he's just doing shocked face. So he's either very, he's method, deep in character of like shell-shocked child.
Off the street.
Or they're literally like, Stephen, stay quiet. And he's like, it's unclear.
Very heroic arrival through the smoke, though. I thought it was very, to quote your favourite show, 911.
Yeah, like, oh my god. Emerging. He's like, oh, carrying the child. Yeah. I mean, that child didn't look light either. And Ten, whilst, I mean, he's whippy, but he's not like brawny.
Whippy. I love that Ten also just goes, oh, it's a cyberkin. Like, he just immediately knew what it was. I'm like, cool, maybe someone should have talked to him about this before we got to this
thing. Yeah. And yeah, and it got very, yeah, again, just like that whole, like, we're getting very monarchy with Court of the Cyber King. And then they have a plan this whole time that she's the Cyber King. And she's like, so what? I thought you were, like, the main dude.
Yeah.
Like, they should have talked about this. She should have nailed down the plan at the scoping phase.
I do feel for her because she just wants freedom and then she's doomed to become a regent. Like, that is so horrible.
Yeah.
You know when she said, your governments will surrender, or someone said that? I think it was her being possessed by the Cybermen. But...
yeah.
Like, I don't know these things, and so I trust you to correct me on this, but were governments a concept in the 1800s?
Yes.
I thought we were just, like, monarchies.
No, so they can coexist.
Can they?
And they done for many hundreds of years.
All right, just
with differing levels of power. Not what modern-day government would look very different, but yes, there were governments in... We had prime ministers at this time.
Okay. I just don't associate... Like, government, I just think of government now. So when you talk about, like, the Roman Empire, I'm like, that's not a government.
No. Well, no. Not in, like, you know, governing body. Ooh, old lady cat incoming. She looks perturbed
Would
that this
like
is happening.
Would you like to make a cameo on the podcast? She just likes to be in the room where people are talking.
Cute.
She wants to be part of the conversation.
So cute.
Yesterday she tried to jump up on here and fell off. So anyway.
Oh no, oh god.
It's okay, she's on gabapentin, everyone. She loves it.
So, balloon TARDIS fixer-upper Jed is 100% being exploited. He's terrified because he's like fleeing because there's a giant fucking Cyberman. And Ten's like, oh, I'll pay you. And then he's... being exploited for being poor because Ten's like, oh, I have money. I don't think he ever paid him.
I had that as a stand-up moment from the ep. Because
oh
he's
my
like,
god.
I'm not going out there. And Ten says, I'll give you £5. And he's like, all right.
No.
Like, what a mood. We're all laboring under capitalism.
No, I wrote exploiting poor Jed in face of peril and for comic relief.
Yeah,
because they're like, his morals are weak.
Because he wants money.
Yeah, no.
But £5 is a lot of money back then.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I would be the same, Jed. He's like, well, I'll give you $1,000. I'm like, all right then.
Cool. I wrote, why did they all explode? But I don't remember what that was about.
Well, the power of empathy lets her take out the
Cybermen.
Yeah,
no, but it was like,
and then they all just fall over. Like, the thing just falls over.
I wrote timber in all caps, because I thought the entire robot was going to fucking timber down onto London. But then... most of London that didn't get crumpled was saved by the Dimension Zapper, which Deus Ex zappered it to
I
fucking wherever.
That Ten tries to talk her down and he's in his balloon and he's doing the thing and then he's like, you know, what do you make of me? You make me into this. Like, he is very good at saying, like, I don't want to do this, but you're forcing my hand.
I know. I wrote that down. Doctor showing mercy to mercy. But then look at what you've become.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, don't... you can, like... like, people are being hurt. People are being crumpled by the robot whilst you're having this wee monologue. You don't need to take a moment to be like, show me you know you did
wrong. Yeah, and then, like, to do the whole, like, empathy thing.
Yeah,
like, he could have just zapped her into the void and been done with
one
it.
One life done
for
the sake of whatever, but he's, like, trying to make a moral lesson.
Yeah.
I fucking hate this. It's a thing with these writers that they do love a fucking moral lesson.
And then everyone's clapping for him because Jackson has done a good PR job psyching him up and everyone's cheering. And I feel like this... I think if there was an arc to these specials, it is the Doctor getting a god complex again. And I think what they're trying to say is that the Doctor always has to have a companion, otherwise he just goes full cray-cray.
Yeah.
So him, like, waving and, like, smiling, I feel like is the start of that god complex kind of kicking in.
Yeah. No, it's true. I wrote, this is a sad end, and generally to the episode.
Yeah.
But then when he gets asked why no companions, in the end they break my heart?
Yeah.
I'm like, I think think you damage them more, dude. And yeah. you constantly seek them out. Like, set some fucking boundaries.
So the full line there is he says, they leave because they should, or they find someone else, or they forget me. I suppose in the end, they break my heart. That is not the way these companions leaving is ever portrayed. Like, I don't feel like...
No.
It's just, it's a weird thing for him to say.
Yeah.
And I feel like he does feel the loss of his companions, but he also appreciates that he's the one who's always reminding them that you have a finite lifespan and yeah. you have lives and all these things. Like, I don't know. It's weird. And I was trying to think of it like, okay, you know, when your pet dies, you do suffer a heartbreak. But yeah, it's not yeah. them breaking your heart. It's the concept of
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's how he should look at it as well. To say, like, they break my heart implies that they're doing it on purpose, that they are wounding him on purpose
yeah.
and that he's kind of got a grudge about it.
No.
Seems very strange.
And if anything, it's actually the opposite, where he has... put them in a situation where they can't come back, Rose, or he's
pushed them so far that they leave, Martha,
or got them to the state through like trauma or whatever that their memories have to be wiped, Donna, and she was kind of being really fucked up with it. So like, yeah, it's fucking, it comes across as trivializing and also whitewashing massively the reality of what actually happened.
He's centering his own experience, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, 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 for sure. But I think it's meant to be, it's not meant to be like, oh, the doctor's fallible. It's meant to be like, oh, he's
the
so...
The poor doctor is yeah, so wounded.
I know. Again, this writing, man. No.
Yeah.
No.
But it's, yeah. I do think we get too, I don't know, sentimental as this goes on. Because they're doing this big, because this Russell T. Davies' last series, it's yeah. Tennant's last series. And I think they just get really bogged down in that. And they're like their own, oh. yeah.
Yeah.
Drinking their own Kool-Aid.
Okay, standouts.
I actually really like that he lets himself hang out at the end. I really thought, I forgot about that, and I thought he was doing the classic fake out where he's like, yeah, I'll join you, and then he'll jump in the TARDIS and
fuck
off.
Yeah.
But he does stick around, and I think that is really, it's nice that he recognizes that he needs that. And I do think there's some real lol moments in this.
Yeah,
like, there's
dude.
Some great lines.
My favorite one was the Cyberman when they revealed their, like, plot, and they were deceiving her, and then they say, that was designated a lie.
Real sass, like, this other man.
You deceived me. You said, and then they're like, that was just.
I saw this thing on Twitter the other day being like, what's your favorite bird in a TV show? And someone quoted that scene from when the Daleks are like, we have no concept of elegance, and the Cybermen are like, that is obvious. Like, I love sassy Cybermen. Why are they so sassy? Why is that programmed into them?
Oh my god. Anytime anyone accuses me of telling something that's not true, I'm going to be like, yeah, well, that was designated a lie. And a quick one. I liked the idea of him saying a long time away.
Yeah.
So we measure length of time, but we measure like away is distance. But saying a long time away is like an interesting turn of phrase that makes sense, but also just feels that little bit off on common parlance. So... it made me be like, oh, that's kind of cool.
And it's like, it makes sense for a Time Lord as well, right?
Yeah.
Like that you would view time slightly differently.
Yeah. And you view distance differently.
Yeah.
An experience. Because it's not like necessarily... because you could be in the same spot and say a long time away. Because that's that separation of time and space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've kept it tight.
Hell.
Well, next week.
I would have shouted hell.
Hell.
I think I was going for hey. Oh, God.
Okay. We're keeping that in. The car. So, next time we'll be watching the second special in this Ten's final tour of greatness, and it's called Planet of the Dead. You can let us know your thoughts by emailing TARDISofOneZone@gmail.com or find us on Instagram, even though I can't remember my login because I had to get a new phone.
And I'm no longer on Instagram.
But I will figure it out, and I will start updating it again, I promise. Anyway,
yay.
So check out the show notes for links, and yeah, we'll see you next time.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye, 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 bye.